I call the meeting of the House of Higher Education Finance and Policy Division to order. There is a quorum present, I believe, and would anyone like to move the minutes for April 3rd, 2019?
So moved, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Representative Vang. So Representative Vang moves approval of the minutes for April 3rd, 2019.
Right.
Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed?
Madam Chair?
Yeah, I did. I see you list me as absent, but I did show up at 3:30.
Okay, so.
I think that's absent.
Okay, so you were present.
I was present.
Now we just passed them as is. What do I need to do to make a change?
Can I move? We amend?
Okay.
I'll move. We amend the minutes of April 3rd.
Madam Chair, I believe the correct motion would be to reconsider.
Okay, that would be good. I'd like to reconsider. Representative Runbeck reconsiders the motion to approve the April 3rd minutes 2019 with her showing as present. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed? The motion prevails. What's that? Okay, so we're reconsidering it. Okay, so I
amend and then adopt.
Okay, so I gotta get this down bad here. Okay, so we're reconsidering it, and I thought I did it with an amendment, but we have to do it a little differently.
You have to do them separately.
Okay, so we're reconsidering the motion to approve April 3rd, 2019, and that has been approved. And now, Representative Runbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I would like to move the amended minutes from April 3rd.
The
motion to amend.
Easy for you to say.
Minutes that say that you were present. Right. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion prevails. Thank you very much. Okay. Okay, so now we're going to move to adopt the minutes as amended. Wow. Thank you. Representative Cleburne, you're all on top of this.
Parliamentary order.
Yeah, there you go.
Yes.
Okay, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? The motion carries. So today we are going to be here to go through the House File 2545, Omnibus Higher Education Finance and Policy Bill, and with the DE amendment, along with the author's amendment today. Our nonpartisan staff will take the lead and walk us through the bill, and afterwards we will hear public testimony. And before we just get started, I do want to thank, it is amazing, this is my first year being a chair, and it's amazing how everybody comes together and puts all of our committee work together and is there, from nonpartisan staff to our committee administrator and legislative committee administrator, and I want to thank everybody for their part in being involved in this, and to our committee members as well. So thank you for being here today, and I will turn it over to our fiscal analyst, Ken Savory, along with Nathan Hopkins from House Research. And I understand, Mr. Savory, you'll be first, and we do, yeah. I think everybody has.
Madam Chair?
Yes. Go ahead. Representative
actually,
Morris.
I thought I heard you say bill number 2545.
I think I said 2544, but I'll actually look
okay,
to be
just,
sure.
Just for the record. It's,
okay, so.
I want to make sure we're on the same
page. Well, thank you. Let's just make sure I said it right. We're going to be doing a walkthrough of 2544 as the DE amendment with the author's amendment. Okay. Proceed, Mr. Savory.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. I'll be going through the financials, the spreadsheet today. I'm speaking from two documents. Document number one is a small one-page document that just has change items, and then we'll do kind of a summary of the larger spreadsheet, which is about three or so pages. So we'll set the large one aside for now and proceed with the one-page change item document.
Excuse me, Mr. Savory, can you hold that up? The one-page document that.
Sure.
Because why do I not have? Which one is it? These are stapled.
Yeah.
So.
Is it here?
Okay.
One's
papers. You don't want to go through it. Okay.
Madam
okay,
Chair.
Okay, now I'm ready. Thank you. You may proceed.
Madam Chair.
Yes. Representative Quam.
I see members having the single page. I'm seeing many members that are having difficulty finding the three page. So while we're going through the one page, if we can have staff make sure everybody has the three page before we start it.
Yeah, Representative Quam, how would if anybody needs the staple three, what's
it?
It's in the blue folder today. And if you don't have it, raise your hand and we'll make sure we get. Okay. So we have two members. Thank you for bringing that to my attention. Appreciate that. Okay. So, Mr. Savory, please proceed.
Thank you. Madam Chair, we'll go through the one-page document first. Just to orientate members to the way the document is laid out, you'll see on the left-hand side a list of agencies and program changes. Then one column in, you'll see line references to the DE amendment and to the author's amendment. Then another column in, you'll see a place where it's indicated if this is a base rider, if this program was in the base. And then subsequently on the following column to the right-hand side, if it is a new rider or a new program that the DE or author's amendment proposes. The first two larger numeric columns reference fiscal years 20 and 21 and fiscal year 22 and 23, the base, as part of the February forecast. The middle two columns represent years I just spoke about, but from the governor's perspective, so the governor's revised budget as of March. And then the following larger right-hand columns reference the DE amendment and author's amendment, both the 20 and 21 year and the 22 and 23 year. And then all the way on the right-hand side are two smaller, shorter columns, which are the difference from the DE amendment, author's amendment, to the 20 and 21 base, and then the percentage change should one be applicable. And so I'll start on line three with the Office of Higher Education.
Okay, Mr. Savory, can I just make sure that everybody understands the spreadsheet? Does anybody have any questions? I just don't want to assume and then have people not being on the same page. Okay, go ahead. Proceed, Mr. Savory.
So, Madam Chair, on line three in the right-hand columns for the DE amendment, in 20 and 21, the DE amendment appropriates $544,410,000 to the Office of Higher Education, and then $529,184,000 in the 20 and 23 tails. Lines 5 through 20 represents either new appropriations or appropriations that have changed. And I'll kind of go through those kind of one by one. Line 6 is the state grant program. The DE amendment increases the state grant program on a one-time basis by $15.4 million. It sets the LME, the LME at 110% of the poverty guideline, and then it reduces the assigned family responsibility by 1% in the second year, and also has language for the Pell grant fill-in, which the committee heard about earlier this year. Line 7 is the agency administration, the increased communication about college costs. This is the governor's change item. The DE amendment appropriates an additional $660,000 over the biennium for that particular purpose. And the bill, you'll see that goes to the agency administration line, located on line 1.23 in the DE, in the author's amendment. Line 8 is the ICAP, or Intervention for College Attendance Program. that increases the base over the biennium by $168,000. And this was a governor's recommendation, but the governor recommended a $336,000 increase over the base, over the biennial base. Line 9 is the SLEDS program, which members heard about. The DE amendment appropriates an additional $1.8 million above the base, and this was a governor's recommendation that asked for a $2 million increase over the base. Line 10 is College Possible. This appropriates an additional $400,000 over the biennial base. Line 11 is the dual training competency grants at the Office of Higher Education. This amendment increases the base by that over the biennium by $2 million. Line 12 is the Summer Academic Enrichment Program, which increases the base over the biennium by $250,000. And this is the governor's recommendation, and the DE amendment and the governor's recommendation in this case are identical. And then on line 13 are grants to teaching candidates in shortage areas. This is a $4.4 million biennial base increase. And then going down one line, line 14, the teacher shortage loan forgiveness program is a $100,000 increase over the biennial base. Line 15 is the student employer connection information system, which is a reduction. Essentially, the program has been removed, and so it's a savings of $1.62 million to the general fund over the base, under the base. Line 16 is a governor's change item, is the Minnesota Reconnect program, which members are familiar with. It is a $4 million increase, $4 million program, $2 million in each fiscal year for 20 and 21, and then funding continuing into the tails. Line 17 is the student loan debt counseling. The DE amendment now establishes a permanent base of $200,000 for the biennium for this program now in 2021 and going forward into the tails. Line 18 is the aspiring Minnesota Teachers of Color scholarships. This program appropriates $1 million in fiscal year 20, and then $1.5 million in fiscal year 21, and then $1.5 million carries forward into the tails for a total of tails of $3 million. Line 19 is the last two items I'll speak to are both one-time funding. So line 19 is the Hunger Free Campus Grants. That's funded at $77,000 per fiscal year, or $154,000 a year for the biennium as a one-time funding. And then on line 20 is a grant to Health Force Minnesota at $75,000 each fiscal year for $150,000 for the biennium, and that is one-time funding. That concludes the OHE section. We'll drop down to line 22, which is Minnesota State. The appropriation for Minnesota State is $1.6 billion, a $159,450,000 increase over the base. And then we'll drop down to line 24 and 25, which are appropriations which have changed. The bulk of change has been increased to the appropriations to the operations and maintenance appropriation within the bill on 25, and that's an additional $159,450,000 over the base. Additionally, the operation and maintenance contains funding for, on line 26, for the ISRS next generation upgrade, which is $10 million for that particular piece in fiscal year 20, and then another $8 million in fiscal year 21. Line 27 represents a rider that was inserted, funded through operations and maintenance for mental health services. That is $125,000 in each fiscal year, and so $250,000 over the base. There was no rider prior to the DE. And then line 28 is a rider referencing open textbook development, which members heard last week. That is a $100,000 appropriation in each fiscal year, so a $200,000 increase to the O&M. Line 30 is the University of Minnesota, which received an additional $114,128,000 on line 30 in total. Line 33 is the change to the operations and maintenance portion of the bill, which is $114,128,000. Line 34 refers to language within the bill requesting that the Board of Regents of the University of Minnesota establish a tuition freeze, and appropriations for that particular line item are $114 million on a biennial basis in fiscal year 20 and 21. And then dropping down to line 35 is an appropriation for the teacher prep program for blind or visually impaired. It was a bill heard earlier this year. And that is $64,000 in each fiscal year for $128,000 over the base. And that funding is continual into the tails. Line 37 represents appropriations to the Mayo Foundation. Those appropriations are at base level and have not changed per the DE or the author's amendment. And then line 42 is the total for higher education for the general fund. If you look in for the columns 20 and 21, this DE amendment and author's amendments appropriates $3.5 billion for the purposes of higher education. and then that continues on in 20 and 23 is $3.6 billion. The committee's target was $304,972,000, and the committee has met its target with both the DE amendment and the author's amendment. And so, Madam Chair, that concludes kind of the one-page summary of the higher education DE amendment and author's amendment. My plan next was to go through the larger spreadsheet, which I believe members have now, and just kind of make some general thoughts about where things can be found. The one-page document is kind of a supplement to the large, to the larger three-page document. This is kind of like what I would call the cliff notes, and the larger one is more of the book, I suppose. So I'll just run through some of the highlights that I talked about before. Line 7 is the state grant formula changes in the Office of Higher Education. You'll see how the appropriation on a one-time basis is broken out, essentially $10 million in fiscal year 20 and $5.4 million in fiscal year 21. Lines 11 through 57 are all of the Office of Higher Education's line items or pass-through grants or programmatic programmatic items in which the agency operates. The vast majority of them, unless they were referenced in the one-page document, are at base funding. And then if there were any changes to those base fundings or new programs, those can be found on line 59 through 73 on the back. So we'll just flip the page over one more time. And line 76, you'll find the total for the Office of Higher Education as I referenced before, and the difference between the total and the base. Again, $544 million, $110,000. This was year 20 and 21. Line 78 starts the Minnesota State section. It references on line 80 central offices and shared services, which are an appropriation outside of the operations and maintenance area. That appropriation remains unchanged at base funding at $66.148 million for the 20 and 21 biennium. Line 81 just represents the base for the operations and maintenance. And then anything on line 83 through line 91, those are riders within the operations and maintenance area that have been in the bill in the past and are therefore carried forward. For example, line 83 is the workforce developmental scholarships. Those remain the same within the DE at $500,000 per year. Line 84, supplemental aid to non-metro colleges, $3 million per year in 20 and 21, and then that fails. Line 85, Cook County Higher Education Board appropriation of $200,000 each year and in the tails. Line 86, online ag course development at $50,000 each year. Line 87, the Veterans to Agriculture Program, $175,000 each year and in the tails. Line 88, sexual assault reporting policies at $40,000 each year in the tails. And then line 89 represents a rider for the ISRS next generation IT system. You'll see in the DE amendment author's amendment column $10 million in fiscal year 20 and then $8 million in 21 for a total of $18 million over the biennium. We'll jump down to line 94 through line 100, which are the change items I referenced in the other smaller spreadsheet. Line 95 represents the $159 million increase to the in-campus investment or to the operations and maintenance area. Line 96 represents the money included within that increase that I mentioned before of $10 million for ISRS. And then line 97 and 98 are those two small programmatic changes regarding mental health services at $125,000 per year, and then the open textbook development at $100,000 per year that are within the O&M. Total changes are on line 100 for the operations and maintenance area at $159,450,000. Again, it's on line 100. And then if you'll drop down, there is another appropriation on line 104 in the Minnesota State section, which is $4.1 million a year to the Learning Network of Minnesota that remains at base and is unchanged. And then line 109 is the Minnesota State total, exactly the same as what I talked about before in the smaller spreadsheet. Line 112 is the University of Minnesota. We'll go on line 114, which is the operations and maintenance portion of the bill. That is the base for that particular appropriation. And then on line 116 starts the riders, very similar to the way it's organized in Minnesota State. So riders within the O&M are as follows. Line 117, $7.8 million in each year for health training restoration. A rider of $50 million per year on line 118 for medical school development. Line 119 is a $4 million rider per year for MnDrive. And then line 21 is a rider appropriation to the Morris campus for scholarship payment assistance of $500,000 per year that remains unchanged in the DES compared to the base. We'll flip the page over. Line 126 references the tuition freeze language I spoke about earlier, which requests the University of Minnesota Board of Regents to implement a tuition freeze. That funding is specified in the bill as $43.5 million in the first fiscal year and $70.5 million in the second fiscal year for a total of $114 million. The $70.5 million appropriation carries forward into the 20 and 23 tails. And then line 127 was the other programmatic change difference in the University of Minnesota. Line 127 was the $64,000 each year for the teacher prep program for blind or visually impaired. And so line 133 is the total change or total new operations and maintenance area. As you can see, it's now $1.274 billion. Line 136 is base language that has gone unchanged for base appropriations that have gone unchanged in the bill. Those are regarding the University of Minnesota system specials or special appropriations. Line 137, the Ag Extension special appropriation remains unchanged at $85.8 million. Line 138, the Health Science special remains unchanged at $18.4 million in 20 and 21. Line 139, the Institute of Technology remains the same at $2.2 million. Line 140, the System Special remains unchanged at $14.3 million. And then line 141, the Mayo Foundation Partnership remains unchanged at $15.9 million. Line 143 just represents the total of all state specials. You'll see there. And then line 147 is a small appropriation of the appropriation of the Healthcare Access Fund for Primary Care Education Initiatives. So that is $4.3 million for the biennium, and that has been unchanged from the base. And then on line 149 represents the total all funds for the University of Minnesota, so that includes the Healthcare Access Fund, so the total being $1.4 billion dollars in 20 and 21. And then line 151 through 156 denotes the Mayo Foundation appropriations, and those are at base and have gone unchanged. And line 158 through 163 represents the total cost of the DE amendment and author's amendment. So if you look at line 163, you'll see the total higher education general fund appropriation. So in total, the DE amendment and author's amendment spends $3.5 billion in 20 and 21. And then $3.6 billion in 22 and 23, which is $304,972,000 above the base, which is the committee's target. And then, members that are interested, on line 166 is the total cost, which is the combination of the Healthcare Access Fund appropriation as well as the general fund appropriation, and that can be found on line 166. And Madam Chair, I think that concludes the walkthrough of the spreadsheets.
And do any of our members have any questions for nonpartisan staff? I should say Mr. Sabre at this point in time. Representative Rumbeck.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I guess I'm unfamiliar with how the Healthcare Access Fund intersects with the higher ed fund. Higher ed spending. That's line 165.
Mr. Savory.
Madam Chair and members, the University of Minnesota, since my time doing higher ed, which has been about six sessions, has consistently received a small appropriation of the Healthcare Access Fund, for specific items related to healthcare training. I can certainly go back and do some research on that, but this appropriation has been at this base level for, I want to say, 5 to 6 years, to my knowledge.
Well, Ms. Madam Chair and Representative Savory, I'd appreciate that information if you have that. Thank you.
Absolutely.
Representative Cleaver.
To that point, I would just like to ask Mr. Savory, you said for training. Is that correct?
Mr. Savory.
Oh, I'm sorry, I misspoke. Madam Chair, I meant to say the primary care education initiatives. I don't want to speak out of turn, so I'll go back and do some research on that particular item, but I will return to the committee with that.
Thank you very much.
Representative Daniels.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Also, Mr. Savory, if we could get percentages on that second page there, just to see if it was from the base and how much it went up to the amount on the right-hand column. Or is it on the other page?
Mr. Savory.
No, Representative Daniels and Madam Chair, the first one-page document has the percentages on it. I haven't added those to the larger spreadsheet yet, but I can certainly do that.
That'd be great. Thank you very much.
Okay. And the members. Oh, I see no further discussion. We can move into our public testimony.
Oh, sorry.
We have more work to do. Thank you very much. Mr. Hopkins, I want to call you by your first name. But Mr. Hopkins, we do need to go over your part first, and I apologize for overlooking that. If you could proceed with the information.
Madam Chair and members, you have a few documents in your packets today. I'd like to sort of explain what each one is to orient you all and then go through a summary of the policy items in the DE amendment as amended by the author's amendment. The DE amendment is coded A19-0412, so that's in your packets. You also have the author's amendment to the DE amendment, which is coded, this is at the top right-hand corner of the document, H2544A2. Finally, you have in your packets an unofficial document, which in the upper right-hand corner is NH-A01. This is what I would recommend following along with in the summary today. This is essentially the DE amendment with the author's amendment incorporated into it. So this is the whole thing that we're going to be doing tomorrow, and that's what the summary is explaining. So I'd recommend following along in that document in your packet, which in the upper right-hand corner has NH-A01 on it. Mr. Savory went through the appropriations, which are in Article 1 of the bill. So I'm not going to duplicate that explanation. Section 2 of Article 1 are the appropriations to the Office of Higher Education. And you see these continue from page 1 to page 12. I'll point out of the policy language for a few new items. On page 3, subdivision 14, there's the appropriation for MN Reconnect. Also, subdivision 40 in the Office of Higher Education's appropriations. This is the agency administration appropriation.
Excuse me a second. I'm not keeping up with you, Mr. Hopkins. Could you start at that? You said page 3. I had already gone further in that, so we're back at page 3 now?
Yep. Page 3, we're within the Office of Higher Education's section, so this is their appropriation section. Mm-hmm. Subdivision 14, that's where you'll find the appropriation for the MN Reconnect program. Another new item to point out within the Office of Higher Education's appropriation section is subdivision 40, which is on page 11. This is the agency administration subdivision. The agency administration subdivision is not new. However, the language underneath on pages on lines 11.5 to 11.11, this is new language. It dedicates up to $330,000 each year for communication and outreach to students and families to communicate information about the expected cost of college and various financial aid and grant options made available to them through the state. Section 3 of Article 1 is the min state appropriation section. That's where that begins. This runs from page 12 to page 14. The one item to point out within this section is on page 12. It's paragraph A under subdivision 3, the operations and maintenance appropriation to min state. So this is lines 12.16 to 12.23, and this is the tuition freeze language for Minnesota State colleges and universities. So this says that the Board of Trustees cannot set a tuition rate in any undergraduate degree-granting program for the next two academic years at a rate greater than the 2018 to 2019 academic year. The appropriations to the University of Minnesota begin on page 14. So this is section 4 of Article 3. So it's the bottom of page 14, and this runs to page 20. And one item worth pointing out policy-wise in this section is on page 15, and this is the tuition freeze language for the University of Minnesota. You'll find this on page 15, line 11, to page 15, line 16. This says that the Board of Regents is requested to maintain the Minnesota undergraduate tuition rate at all campuses for the 2019 and 2020 and 2020 and 2021 academic years at the same level as the 2018 to 2019 academic year. The blind and visually impaired program language is in subdivision 2 of the university's appropriation. It's paragraph F, and it is on page 16. Thank you. So this is the $64,000 a year for to establish a teacher preparation program for licensure as a teacher of the blind or visually impaired. And this also says that the base in fiscal year 2025 and thereafter is zero. So this funding continues into the tails, but it cancels in 2025. Article 2, which begins on page 21, is the beginning of the policy language. I'll go through this section by section. Section 1 on page 21 deals with SLEDS, the Statewide Longitudinal Educational Data System. This language integrates the Early Childhood Longitudinal Data System, ECLDS, into the SLEDS statute. On page 23, section 2, this amends the sexual harassment and violence policy statute that applies to public and most private post-secondary institutions in Minnesota. It requires notification to victims of legal advocacy services. Section 3 is on page 24. This requires post-secondary institutions to include in their legally mandated policies on sexual harassment and sexual violence an affirmative consent standards. It also changes current law requiring sexual assault training to students and some faculty and staff to incorporate that affirmative consent standard. On page 25, section 4, this is where we start getting into the state grant program. Here you find the policy language that reduces the assigned family responsibility by 1 percentage point in fiscal year 2021 and onward. Section 5, this is also the state grant program. This is the language that is going to fill in for the amount of an unawarded federal Pell Grants. So under current law, some non-citizen students and students who do not have high school diplomas are not eligible to receive Pell Grants, but the amount of a Pell Grant that they don't receive is nevertheless taken into consideration for their state grant award. So this would increase state grant awards to fill in for those missing Pell Grants for those particular students. Section 6 is on page 26. This is also dealing with the state grant program. So this is increasing the default amount of the living and miscellaneous expense allowance from 101% of the federal poverty guidelines to 110% of the federal poverty guidelines. So altogether, these three sections, 5, 6, and 4, 5, and 6, which address the state grant program, are expected to result in a in 4,180 new recipients of the state grant in fiscal year 2020, and 6,319 new recipients in fiscal year 2022, sorry, fiscal year 2021. The increase in the average state grants is $178 in 2020 and $144 in fiscal year 2021. On page 27, section 7 is the Minnesota Reconnect program. This requires the Office of Higher Education to administer a program that would encourage adult learners to return to school to complete their degrees. On page 28, section 8, this is the Aspiring Minnesota Teachers of Color Scholarship Program. This creates a new scholarship program for student teachers belonging to racial or ethnic groups that are currently underrepresented in the Minnesota teacher workforce. On page 30, section 9, this amends the student teacher candidate grants in shortage areas. So this is an existing program amended in this section. It gives stipends to student teachers who intend to teach in high-need fields or areas or who belong to racial or ethnic groups underrepresented in the teacher workforce in Minnesota. One thing to note, in subdivision 2 of this section, the eligibility section, the author's amendment has incorporated the Office of Higher Education's suggestions in their policy bill with regard to how intent can be demonstrated when an applicant, because an applicant is required to intend to teach in a licensure shortage area. So this takes some of the Office of Higher Education's policy language about how intent can be documented, and that runs from page 30 to 31. Section 10 of the bill begins on page 31. This is the new student loan debt counseling program. This establishes a program administered by the Office of Higher Education to provide grants to qualified organizations offering student loan debt repayment counseling. Sections 11 to 15, so this runs from page 33 to page 34. These are all changes to the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program, which is an existing program. Section 11 on page 33 amends eligibility requirements to expand access to Head Start teachers. Some of these changes are mostly technical and administrative. However, I'd highlight that section 13 is going to shift responsibility for identifying shortage areas from the Minnesota Department of Education to PELSB, the Professional Standards Board for Teachers. Finally, section 15, which is there on page 34, this increases the maximum loan forgiveness amount to $2,000. It also allows applicants who meet both licensure field and unrepresented racial and ethnic group eligibility to receive up to $4,000. Finally, it increases the maximum number of awards that a teacher can receive to 10. Section 16, and you'll notice this begins on page 35. On this unofficial document, some of the section numbers are incorrect. That will be fixed when everything gets engrossed officially. It says section 11 there on 35.6. It should say section 16. So we're on page 35. These deal with dual training competency grants. Section, what will be 16, adds authority to include travel, lodging, and meals associated with employee training to the cost of training submitted as part of a grant program. Section 17, which is on page 35 to 36, this increases the maximum grant from $150,000 to $187,500. It increases the maximum annual grant per employee from $6,000 to $7,500. And finally, it limits the amount of costs for those travel, lodging, and meals, which were permitted to be submitted in Section 16, to no more than $1,500 per employee. Section 18 begins on page 36. This is planning information for post-secondary education. This expands the Office of Higher Education's duty to share information regarding post-secondary opportunities to include post-secondary options for students with intellectual and developmental disabilities. Section 19 on page 37, this deals with mental health services. This amends the student health statute for Minnesota State Colleges and Universities to require the system to contract with mental health organizations to provide mental health services and information about health insurance to students on campuses at up to five state colleges. Section 20, and this is marked as section 14, they're on 37.19. It will be section 20 when everything gets engrossed. This is the Hunger Free Campus designation for Minnesota State Community and Technical Colleges. The next few sections are the open textbooks bill that this committee heard earlier. We're on page 38. And so this is, it's marked as section 15, 16, 17, and 18. It will be sections 21 through 24. So this is the open textbook program. The real substance of the program is contained on page 39. In section, what's marked as 17, what will be 23, this requires Minnesota State to develop a program to incentivize the use of open textbooks. On page 40, section 25, it's marked as 19 on 40.8, it will be section 25. This, for fiscal year 2021, permits the Office of Higher Education to adjust the cost of attendance in the state grant program to include child care expenses after consultation with post-secondary institutions and with prior written notice to the legislature. Section 26, this is the Direct Care Service Corps pilot program. This establishes a pilot program at Winona State University to attract students to work as personal care attendants. Madam Chair and members, that concludes Article 2, the policy language. Article 3, which begins on page 40, is the Office of Higher Education's agency policy that they suggested. Representative Vang had carried that bill. A few things to point out in this section. I'm not going to go through everything in here since most of it is technical and administrative changes. On page 41, section 2 of this, this establishes a new Office of Higher Education administered grant program to expand concurrent enrollment opportunities. This language had previously been contained in an appropriations rider. However, it's being expanded and codified in statute here. That runs on page 41 to 42. A few other notable changes. On page 49, section 18, the school closure section, this amends the requirements for when a school intends to close. This codifies current Office of Higher Education practice when it comes to school closures, but it puts some of those practices in statute and gives them a little more explanation. So this particular section is making this change in the private and out-of-state public section of the Office of Higher Education's policy. So that deals with private colleges operating in Minnesota and out-of-state public colleges and universities operating in Minnesota. A similar change is contained on page 56, which is section 26 of the bill. It's the same language regarding school closure. However, it's placed in the Private Career Schools Act, which is the law that regulates private career schools in Minnesota. Finally, the last section in Article 3 that I'd like to highlight for members is on page 59. This is section 30. The heading is College Savings Plan Matching Grants. The Minnesota College Savings Plan is the state's 529 plan. It formerly offered state-sponsored matching grants to account holders, to certain account holders. Due to actions by the third-party operator of that plan, some of those account holders did not receive regular updates about the status of their state-sponsored dollars, which may have resulted in some of those funds canceling back to the state. If those funds, the law required that if those funds weren't used by a certain point of time, they would cancel back to the state. So this section is authorizing the Office of Higher Education to take reasonable measures to mitigate any adverse consequences of that event to those affected account holders. So, Madam Chair, that concludes Article 3, the Office of Higher Education's suggested agency policy changes. Happy to answer any questions that members have.
Members, are there any questions for our nonpartisan staff or the policy changes? Okay. Seeing none, then we will, I believe our next step is our public testimony. So our first person on the agenda, I got to pull up my, is Chancellor Malhotra from Minnesota State. And are you going to be being joined by Brian? No. Okay. Okay, thank you. Welcome to our committee, Chancellor Malhotra.
Thank you. Thank you very much, Chair Bernardi, Representative Nonis, and members of the committee. My name is Devinder Malhotra, and I'm the Chancellor of Minnesota State. On behalf of the students, faculty, staff, and campus leaders, thank you for your historic support for public higher education in Minnesota. I want to acknowledge President Kaler, who I understand is ill today and unable to be here. I would like to thank him for his strong voice and advocacy over the past several years for investing in higher education. We have forged a cooperative relationship between our two systems that benefits all Minnesotans, and while our relationship sometimes gets stressed, particularly during the hockey season, we very much appreciate the collaboration and look forward to the work that is ahead. President Kaler's voice and advocacy will be missed both in Minnesota and nationally. Indeed, the state of Minnesota is fortunate to have two systems of public higher education serving the citizens of Minnesota in every community across the state. Together, our impact on the social vitality and economic prosperity of the state is both local and global in its scope and magnitude. Madam Chair, again, I want to thank you and your colleagues for your very strong recommendation for our colleges and universities, as well as your strong support for public higher education overall. We appreciate your recognition of the need to fund a tuition freeze. As we have testified several times this session, freezing tuition without providing revenue creates significant budgetary stresses for our campuses. Your bill gives Minnesota State the resources needed to freeze tuition while honoring our commitment to the success of our students, to diversity, equity, and inclusion, and to the programmatic and financial sustainability of our colleges and universities. I was pleased to see that your bill acknowledges the need to appropriately balance the biennial budget. Your proposal provides 40% of the operational funds in the first year and 60% in the second year, which helps us avoid structural gaps associated with budgetary tails. Also, the $10 million you have allocated for the next gen is crucial. We look forward to working with you to move this project forward. I want to acknowledge the amount of time you spent in committee learning who our students are and how we prepare them for both work and life. I appreciate the time you took to learn about the student experience and further your understanding of the importance of critical student services in order to make sure that every student succeeds. We share the same priorities and your sense of urgency and appreciate your partnership in this work. Madam Chair, I believe that the great work of this committee will lend greater clarity and confidence in the transformative work of our faculty and staff across the state. Thank you, Madam Chair, and members of the committee.
Thank you. We appreciate your testimony and the service you provide to our state and our students. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Okay. So, the next person, which is Mr. Burnett from the University of Minnesota. Hi, welcome to the committee. If you could please state your name and who you're with, that would be wonderful.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Madam Chair, Representative Norris, and members of the committee, for the record, I'm Brian Burnett. I'm the Senior Vice President for Finance and Operations at the University of Minnesota. It's a pleasure to be with you again here today. As you heard, President Kaler was scheduled to appear this morning with you to carry out our message of gratitude directly, but he's come down with an illness, so I'm pinch hitting in his plate. I am here to join Minnesota State and express our gratitude and thanks for the strong investment this committee has made in the University of Minnesota and the Minnesota State system. I'm also grateful to the Chancellor for his comments on President Kaler's leadership over the last 6 years around investing in higher education and maintaining affordability. The important investment in your bill you've made in the state's public institutions, our students, our faculty and staff, is a tremendous statement and a financial commitment we take very seriously. At the university, this funding level allows the president to recommend to our board to hold tuition flat for the next two academic years for Minnesota resident undergraduate students on all of our campuses. It will allow us the opportunity to carefully consider investments in our students in the areas of mental health, academic counseling, and support services. It will allow us to provide a compensation increase to our faculty and staff to help keep pace with our counterparts across the country, where in many places our compensation levels have fallen below our peers. It will allow us to consider strategic investments in areas such as our Greater Minnesota campuses, extension, veterinary medicine, and others, and it will help us keep pace with the growing inflationary demands we face each year. Members, when the president began his tenure at the University of Minnesota, he made a commitment to ensuring the university remains a place that is accessible and affordable for all Minnesotans, and that our public institutions were strong and high quality. This is the goal we share with Chancellor of the Minnesota State System, and I know it's a goal shared by you. Your budget bill is introduced is a strong affirmation of the importance of the public institutions and the work we do for Minnesotans every day, and we thank you for this level of support. We look forward to working with you, the Senate, and the Governor in the weeks ahead to maintain these funding levels. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Burnett. Appreciate your testimony today. And then we have Paul Cervenek, President of Minnesota Private College Council, and on the deck would be Pat Benner and Jennifer Irwin from AskMe Council 5.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, I'm Paul Cervenek, President of the Minnesota Private College Council. I want to begin by thanking you for the opportunities you have given to our students to testify before you and for listening to them in the many meetings you had with them individually so that they could convey to you the deep gratitude they have for the financial aid they receive through the Minnesota State Grant Program. I also want to thank you for giving several of our college presidents the opportunity to testify and share with you the high-quality educational opportunities that are offered at our institutions. The state grant program makes a tremendous difference in the lives of more than 80,000 students who benefit from it at both public and private colleges. The House proposal allows for a major new investment in higher education in our state. That's an important and very good choice for our state, a choice that can allow the state to make progress on some of our biggest higher education challenges. Perhaps the most critical challenge, higher education challenge our state faces, is achieving educational equity for lower income students, students of color, and Native American students. As you all know, as a state, we have among the highest attainment gaps in the nation. While there is no single solution to closing attainment gaps, the greatest barrier to college access and degree completion for lower and middle income students is college affordability. The best and most direct education tool you have to address these educational disparities is the Minnesota State Grant Program. The state program, grant program advances educational equity and helps close disparities in our educational system by recognizing that some students have a much greater need for tuition support than other students do. If we want to close our attainment gaps, our state must make greater commitment to need-based aid through the Minnesota State Grant Program, because the grant program focuses the state's limited resources on those students who have the greatest need, the very students who face the greatest barriers to educational success. We appreciate that House File 2544 makes an investment of $15 million in new funding for the state grant program, but we believe that level of investment is inadequate to meet the needs of lower-income students. Governor Walz has proposed $43 million in new funding for the state grant program. That amount gets the state closer to the investment needed to make meaningful progress toward the goal of educational equity in our state. We heard from many of you that you like the governor's proposed funding level for the state grant program, and we are thankful that so many legislators, including many of you on this committee, signed on as co-authors of our state grant bill. As the legislative process moves forward, we want to work with all of you and the Senate and the governor to achieve a balanced set of higher education investments that includes a larger investment in educational equity through the Minnesota State Grant Program. Thank you for the opportunity to share our views on this bill.
Thank you, Mr. Cervenek. Okay, next on deck is, up now is Pat Benner and Jennifer Irwin. And then on deck is Rob Woodlick from the GUSU 2 Cure Paralysis Foundation. Okay, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and your affiliation.
All right. Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Pat Benner. I'm a legislative representative for AFSCME Council 5. I'll just be available to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Hello, Madam Chair and committee. Thank you for hearing our testimony. My name is Jennifer Irwin, and I have worked at Rochester Community and Technical College for 15 years as a dean and faculty support. I am also a member of Local 4001, which represents state workers in the Minnesota State Colleges and University system. I also hold offices as campus steward at RCTC, chief steward at St. Paul College and Century College, and I'm executive board member for Local 4001. Additionally, I also serve on the State Employee Policy Committee Executive Board and the Minn State Policy Committee Executive Board. AFSCME is pleased to support House File 2544. We appreciate the work of Chair Bernardi in assembling a bill that increases operations and maintenance appropriations to both the Minnesota State and University of Minnesota systems in the next two biennia. This bill prevents a situation that makes our students' education even more unaffordable, and it also will prevent the need for the systems to make cuts to curricula, faculty, or staff, as they won't be given an unfunded mandate to freeze tuition. We also appreciate the chair's inclusion of bills and provisions that will give students more resources in managing the burden of student loan debt, improving campus safety, and increasing quality of life for students. When students go to school worrying about student debt, dealing with food insecurity at home, or missing needed mental health counseling, their quality of work suffers. If students can go to school and just think about learning course material, forming lifelong friendships, and developing skills that will propel them through the job market, that benefits all of us. We at AFSCME support this bill because it is a step in the right direction to achieve an affordable education for Minnesotans, and it ensures that we as staff can provide the best services to make sure our students receive the value they deserve. We urge your passage of House File 2544, and thank you for hearing our testimony.
Thank you for your testimony. Appreciate you being here today. Thank you. Thank you. And welcome to the committee, Rob Woldick, and if Barb Mace from Women Staying Strong could be on deck, that would be excellent.
That's good. Hear me? Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Rob Woldick. I'm from Get Up, Stand Up to Cure Paralysis Foundation, and with me is Barbara Mace from our organization, too. We're here to talk about the spinal cord and Traumatic Brain Injury Research Grant Program and the Direct Care Service Corps Pilot Project Grant. You know, we're very grateful that we're still included in the this program is included while we're asking for more funds this year. You know, on a personal note, some of the grants we had to turn away, one was affecting arm and hand function in people with spinal cord injuries. And it's something I would have liked to see funded, but it was not awarded last year. So, but as you've seen, we've done a lot with the program from what has been graciously awarded to us. So we're very grateful for that. And I'll let you go on.
Welcome to the committee. I believe it's Barb Mace.
Yes.
Okay, so please say your name and your organization.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair Bernardi and committee members. Thank you very much for this opportunity to speak to you about a cause that is very dear to my heart. I'm here to speak to you this afternoon about a critical need that could affect anybody in this room at any time. It impacted my life on the morning of March 27th of 2002 at 3:15 in the morning. I got a call from the emergency room physician telling me that my daughter, 19 years old, a beautiful, vibrant young woman, had broken her neck. And since that day, our lives have changed, and they will be changed permanently. This is something that changes a person's life in ways that you couldn't imagine. The bill here before you today addresses two needs. One is, it has to do with post-secondary students who are saddled, as we all know, with debt that is very difficult for them to find a way out of. Secondly, the need is for people like my daughter who are living in their home and who rely every day, sometimes 24 hours, 7 days a week, on other people for help. Quite often, this is family members, and we're happy to do it. However, I have to say, my daughter was injured in 2002, and I'm getting older. And as I get older, it's harder to lift her. It's harder to do all of the personal cares that she needs help with, in addition to providing food and just all the basics to keep her happy and healthy and safe. She also relies, as many other people do, on personal care attendants who are hired through agencies, home care agencies. However, we're finding, as the time is going on, that we are now in crisis mode, because what's happened here is the needs are increasing, but the number of people who are willing to work as personal care attendants is going down. What's happening is they're not being paid enough, and people who used to go into this particular type of work are now being offered incentives and benefits and also higher wages in other fields. So we're finding a real lack of people who are willing to work in this particular field. And as you can imagine, my daughter can't get out of bed in the morning without help. She can't feed herself, provide food without help. So we're in crisis mode here. So I don't want to just leave you on that dire note. I'd like to offer a solution. And this is something that you have the ability to do. This solution will help the students, and it will help the people who need the help of the students as PCAs. So the proposal is to create the Minnesota Direct Care Service Corps. This is one of the strategies that was included in the November. 30 seconds. I'm sorry. Okay. This service corps would be a pilot project, and it would be allow post-secondary students to get a financial incentive working in this position. They would be hired by home health care agencies, trained by them, and given an incentive to continue on in this role. We believe it would draw more people in and provide a broader population to work for people who need this help. I want to thank Chair Bernardi. We're very honored and proud that she recognizes the way in which the Minnesota Direct Care Service Corps addresses this very human need. Thank you all.
Thank you.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. And I do want to let members know this, what Ms. Mays talks about is one bill that we hadn't heard in committee. And so I think we have another testifier here today as well about the program. And so if you have questions, we can ask when the other testifier comes up, we can ask questions. I did talk to Representative Nornes to ask if this was okay to add into the bill that we had not heard in committee. He said yes, it was. So we were going to get to them, but since you came up, we will. You could state your name for the record, and we allow testifiers 3 minutes to testify. And for this testifier, I'll give members ask questions if they need to ask questions. So go ahead.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi, members of the committee. My name is Valerie DeFore, and I'm the Executive Director of Health Force Minnesota, which is one of 8 centers of excellence within the Minnesota State System of Colleges and Universities. We are hosted and very proudly so by Winona State University. I'm happy and thrilled, actually, to be sitting here to talk to you about this Direct Care Service Corps idea. I have been working in the healthcare workforce space for 18 years now, and I have never come across an occupation or a segment of the healthcare sector that needed more, that had such a critical need for additional workers. It is heart-rending work that's going into meeting the workforce needs of this sector. What I'm excited about for this Direct Care Service Corps pilot is I think it can solve a lot of challenges and problems all at once. By recruiting students in college, having them work as PCAs, and then providing a financial incentive after, let's say, the first semester that they have completed work, an increasing incentive the second semester, and then the third and the fourth, we're building in a response to the challenge of salaries or hourly rates of pay for those students. We also believe this will increase quality of care because there will be hopefully less turnover, less time spent in orientation, so we will be incentivizing retention of these students as PCAs. We think that will increase satisfaction. We think it will decrease costs, and we will build into this pilot a strong evaluation process to measure those outcomes. I think maybe one of the bigger outcomes of this project might actually be the increased empathy and understanding that we will hopefully see in these students, and that will be a ripple effect across all of our college-age students. So thank you very much for considering this.
Yes, and thank you for your testimony. And for members, it's on page 10, line 10.29 is where this language has been added into the bill. Are there any questions for members? Okay. Representative Lehman.
Okay, I'm just looking. I thought I had it, and I was looking on page 40. So we're. I'm looking at the wrong.
40 as well?
It's on page 40.
Yeah. Okay. So the appropriation is on 10 on page 40 is the policy language.
Okay. Well, I thank you for this. I was wondering if I missed a meeting or something. So this we didn't hear the bill,
right?
But it was just incorporated into omnibus bill.
Right. And so we're hearing it today.
Okay. Well, I would just like to comment that I wouldn't be here today if I didn't have a PCA at home right now. This is. Terrific. I totally identify with what you're talking about. There's a real need in Minnesota. So I'm really happy. I haven't had a chance to totally review it, but it looks like the pilot program is going to reach greater Minnesota as well as the metro area. Is that correct?
To our testifiers.
Even though it's out of Winona State. It's
right.
Yeah. Yes. Madam Chair, members, yes, we would run this probably as a two-location pilot for now, one in the metro and one in greater Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Health Force is hosted at Winona State, but we serve the entire state.
Okay. And for the record, that was Ms. Before.
Thank you.
Okay. Did you have a follow-up?
No. Just some clarification and a question. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. Any further discussion?
Okay.
Well, thank you for coming to testify on that. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. So next on deck, up is Samuel Smith, the public policy coordinator for NAMI Minnesota, and then Michael, and I may not do this right, but Fua, an MICC student, is on deck. Okay. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name and organization.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my name is Sam Smith, and I'm the Public Policy Coordinator for NAMI Minnesota. I'm here today to testify in support of House File 2544 and especially the effort to increase access to mental health services at Minnesota State. Most community colleges have access to academic counselors, and these are a very important part of our continuum of supports to help students coping with stress, managing their workload, and other important issues. However, some students with mental illnesses need more, and this legislation will allow for a community mental health provider to co-locate at a community college to provide mental health services. This is based on the very popular and successful school-linked mental health model, and the community mental health provider will be able to bill third-party insurance, help students get on insurance, and give them mental health care from a mental health professional. So thank you so much for your time and including this in the bill, and have a great day.
Yeah, thank you for your testimony. Okay, and on deck is Violeta Hernandez Espinoza with the Minnesota Council of Latino Affairs. And then up with us right now is Michael. And if you could, why don't you say your full name so I get it right and who you're affiliated with?
Chair Barnardi and members of the committee, my name is Michael Fuel, a 2018 graduate of Minnesota Independence College and Community, a college for students with autism and learning differences. Thank you for letting me speak here today. For me, high school was really hard. I learned differently than other students, so I didn't feel like I fit in, and I had little to no friends. I watched my younger brother enjoy high school and his friends who were calling and coming over. I never got a call. I never had someone who wanted to make plans with me. I struggled watching him go to college when I didn't think I ever could. Luckily, I was wrong. My mother was determined to find higher education for me. She did a ton of research and found MICC. It was perfect. For once, all the time she talked to the store clerks paid off. I love MICC so much. I can't even explain how much it changed my life. First off, now I'm a college graduate. I live independently. I have a job at Great Wolf Lodge that I work about 50 hours a week. I love it I would like to state, I do all these hours not because I have to, but because I want to and love this job so much. I have also been advocating for MICC at the Capitol a lot, which I never would have had the confidence to do before MICC. I like it here so much, maybe I should run for office. Fortunately for all you guys, all your seats are safe, so don't worry. MICC changed my life, and it changes the life of every student who attends. We appreciate so much the past support the legislator has provided to MICC. I am, however, disappointed that the new funding for MICC isn't included in this omnibus bill, so I am hoping you will reconsider. MICC graduates help fill Minnesota's workforce shortage. The return on investment for every dollar given to MICC is $72 back to Minnesota's economy, and MICC makes Minnesota a leader in higher education. You have the power to help MICC double their enrollment and create way more success stories like mine, and I really hope you will do that by adding MICC funding to this bill. Thank you.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Fuel, and I did enjoy our visit in my office. And I was just gonna ask, there's somebody that needs to leave right now. Would you mind testifying right after? Is that okay? Does that work out for you guys too? Just want to be sure. Okay, so it's Lutheran Social Services, and there she is. Okay,
thank
if you could
you.
State your name.
Thank you very much.
My name is Juliana Keene from Lutheran Social Service, and I just wanted to take a minute to sincerely thank the committee, thank Chair Bernardi and the other authors, Representative Haley, Representative Pryor, our chief author, Representative Haley, Representative Bernardi, Leen, Nornes, and Daniels for the student loan repayment counseling bill, which will support hundreds of borrowers throughout Minnesota who are struggling with student loan debt and help them get back on track so they can move forward with their goals around starting a business, homeownership, returning to school. So thank you very much for including that in your omnibus bill, and look forward to continuing to work with you. Thanks. Yes.
And thank you for your testimony. Okay, so Violeta Hernandez Espinoza, as well as we have him up as well. And on deck is Brent Jeffers, president of the Inter-Faculty Organization. Welcome to our committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. Buenas tardes, or good afternoon to all of you. Madam Chair and members, for the record, my name is Violeta Hernandez Espinosa, and I serve as Education Legislative Director for the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs. I'm here today to provide a united message about the committee's omnibus bill on behalf of the three state ethnic councils and Indian Affairs Council. To begin, thank you very much for including provisions and investments from the Increased Teachers of Color Act, found in House File 3434. Diversifying the teacher workforce has been our four councils' top priority in education over the last and current biennium. Madam Chair and members, as we testified a week ago during the positive hearing on House File 434, these provisions and investments now included in your omnibus bill are built on consensus and feedback from hundreds of diverse community and organizational stakeholders. The State Ethnic Councils and Indian Affairs Council as state agencies have the important statutory duty to advise and inform elected officials about our constituent communities and their needs. We appreciate the committee's serious consideration and responsiveness to our recommendations. The investments and policy changes you have proposed in this bill will do much more than ever before to address the most significant barriers to increasing teachers of color and American Indian teachers in Minnesota. Addressing the shortage, in the interconnected ways these proposals are crafted in combination with E12 provisions, will also have significant impact in addressing factors that contribute to the underachievement of students from our constituent communities, which is ultimately impacting our state's ability to reach its higher education goals. As part of your committee's contribution to this historic effort for the state, your bill proposes important new and additional investments focused on those who most need the support, including significantly increased investment in the student teacher candidate grants in shortage areas program, the establishment of an aspiring teachers of color scholarship program to support candidates admitted to programs prior to student teaching, and increased investment in the teacher shortage loan forgiveness program. We thank the author of House File 434, Representative Mohammed Noor, and the many co-authors who have signed onto this important piece of legislation and onto its parent bill, the Increased Teachers of Color Act, HF824, for continuing to unite across party lines to address the severe shortage of teachers of color in Minnesota with this historic legislation. Also, thank you to the committee and House staff who have also entertained our many questions and for the work leading up to this omnibus bill. Once again, we thank the chair and the committee for adopting our recommendations. We look forward to working with members of the conference committee in the upcoming days to ensure that these programs and policy changes get signed into law. Madam Chair, also on behalf of the Minnesota Council on Latino Affairs, I would also like to commend the committee for including provisions from House File 573 in relation to the state grant program, which will provide greater support to approximately 500 Minnesotan students who currently are being impacted by funding gaps as a result of ineligibility for federal Pell Grants. Having personally worked directly with many students in this situation, I know how helpful it would be for them should this be signed into law. Thank you for your time.
Thank you for your testimony. And welcome to the committee, Mr. Spies.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Paul Spies, and I'm speaking on behalf of the Coalition to Increase Teachers of Color and American Indian Teachers in Minnesota, which has gained nearly 50 organizational endorsements for our Increased Teacher of Color Act. This was the original source of the amendments and the inclusion of the programs in this omnibus bill. And we thank you very much for these strategic investments in subdivisions 28, 29, and 37. Research is very clear that teachers of color help narrow opportunity and achievement gaps. They will help our state reach its higher ed attainment goals, and we will help our economy reducing opportunity and achievement gaps. First of all, I'd like to thank the committee for the strategic investments and historic investments in the student teacher grant program. This is the most significant barrier to becoming a teacher, as you heard in the powerful testimony a week ago, and we need 630 new teachers to enter the workforce, a net gain, and your provisions will give funding to at least 600 new student teachers entering the profession over the biennium. So thank you very much for that historic investment. Also, thank you very much for the historic investment establishing the Aspiring Minnesota Teacher of Color Scholarship Program. This very important program for candidates after they've been admitted but before they student teach is also very crucial as an incentive to enter the profession and to get to that final culminating student teaching experience. So thank you for that. Finally, thank you for the amendment to the DE amendment that includes the important policy language for the Teacher Shortage Loan Forgiveness Program. All of these combined factors, along with the E-12 provisions that were financed by the Education Finance Committee, will make our state a stronger state and a better state for equitable access to effective and diverse teachers. Please stay strong with these investments and policy provisions during the conference committee negotiations, and please count on us to be a partner with you as the session develops. Thank you.
And thank you for your testimony, Mr. Spies. Next up is Brent Jeffers with the president of the Interfaculty Organization, and Matt Williams is on deck.
Madam Chair, representatives, thank you for the opportunity this session to talk about our organization and our values, and I appreciate the opportunity today to thank you for this
budget.
Well,
first of all, please state your name and organization.
Yes, sorry, Madam Chair. Okay. My name is Brent Jeffers. I'm the president of the Interfaculty Organization, and I'd like to express my gratitude to this budget proposal. It has been a goal of our faculty organization to advocate for the return to the statutory funding of 67% from the state. And this proposal reminds me of the 2013 appropriation where we made a big step in reversing the trend of the disinvestment in higher education. This budget proposal helps protect the quality of our education, helps protect our institutions, and will help serve our students. I would like to make a special thank you to Representative Wolgamott for his work and leadership in the development of the open textbook program. Our faculty are excited to begin work on that, and we think that's another step of helping our students achieve success of a bachelor's degree.
Okay, thank you for your testimony, and welcome to the committee, Matt Williams. Go ahead, state your name and your affiliation.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, I am Matt Williams and the Vice President of the Minnesota State College faculty. Like President Jeffers, I'm here to express our appreciation for your engagement in this process up to this point. We've had many rich and substantive conversations with you about higher education policy up to this point. And the fact that we've had so many conversations, I think, speaks volumes of your leadership in this area, and we really, truly thank you for that. As you know, the MSCF represents faculty from the public to your colleges, and we work with students in communities throughout Minnesota. And so we see firsthand how important affordability is for our students and for our communities. And so while we as a nation have been talking about affordability for some time now, the conversation is only increasing in urgency. So just as an example, last summer I asked our own faculty at a leadership gathering how many of them were actively paying off student loans. A clear majority of their hands went up, and of younger faculty just beginning their careers, nearly every single hand was up. So as educators and policymakers in the realm of higher education, this then is the urgent challenge of our times. As educators in public colleges committed to the mission of open access, we also believe just as strongly that we cannot achieve affordability by being cheap on quality. The demands of civic life and contemporary work require higher education to be high quality for all, not just high quality for the few who can afford it. And so we're incredibly thankful for your work on this budget that includes a bold, direct investment in public higher education. At these proposed levels, it allows us to take a meaningful stand on affordability while preserving the level of quality that all Minnesotans deserve. Thank you for your time.
And thank you for your testimony. We have Frankie Becerra up next with the president of LEAD Minnesota. Welcome to our committee, and please state your name and affiliation again.
Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, my name is Frankie Becerra, president of LEAD MN, the statewide student association representing over 120,000 Minnesota community and technical college students. Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, it is my pleasure to be testifying before you all today. The great thing about going last is that I actually have a pretty long testimony. Just kidding. But now that I have your attention, I would first like to thank you for including the hunger-free campus designation and grants in your omnibus bill. This initiative is the first step in raising awareness and connecting our students with the resources that they need the most to be successful. Because too often, their academic success is being determined by factors outside of the classroom. This is truly a student-led and student-driven initiative to begin addressing a major barrier to many of our students. And having legislators support this means a great deal to them. In the interest of time, I would like to focus my comments on the proposed tuition freeze and strong investment provided in to our campuses in House File 2544. As a president of LEAD MN, I've traveled across the state and talked to hundreds of students. I can tell you that too many of our community and technical college students are struggling to afford what is supposed to be the entry point into higher education and should be the pathway to the middle class. I cannot say this candidly enough. Many of our students can simply not afford further increases in tuition or drown themselves in student debt. Far too many of our low and middle income students find themselves left without enough financial aid to make college affordable. Our students often work multiple jobs, such as myself. Thankfully, I got my shift covered tonight, just to make ends meet and cover the cost of their education. These students are often putting in the work to pursue and pay for their educations, but many of them, again, are still falling short. These students are the backbone of our local economies. They are our future welders, electricians, farmers, nurses, police officers, mechanics, broadcasters, counselors, and so much more. Chair Bernardi, members of the committee, thank you for your support in making strong investments in our colleges along with tuition freeze. Over the last 6 years, you've all supported students by freezing or lowering tuition through the state budget. With your help, we can make sure that in this session, students do truly come first.
Thank you for your testimony, Mr. Becerra. We do have some more, if only it was the last testifier, we do have some more people that have signed up, and then we will be asking if there's anyone in our audience who wishes to testify. We have Roger Arneson with College Possible.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members. My name is Roger Arneson. I represent College Possible. And just very quickly, we want to thank you, Madam Chair, and our author, Representative Bang, and the committee for including support for College Possible in this bill. The support that you're expressing here is going to allow us to get more kids into college through our program and to provide more support to kids when they're in college. We think this is a very appropriate place to put the support, and we know your choices are difficult when you make them, so we really do appreciate the support. So thank you very much, Madam Chair and members.
Good. Thank you for your testimony. We have next up Christina Lairdon with the Minnesota Student Association, and on deck is Steve Jacobson, the National Federation of the Blind in Minnesota. Hello and welcome to our committee. Please state your name and organization.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My name is Christina Lairdon. I am from the Minnesota Student Association, but I'm also representing the Student Legislative Coalition today.
Thank you and welcome.
All right. So as I mentioned, I represent the Student Legislative Coalition, which essentially what that is we represent all five student campuses. I work very closely with them to represent student interests here at the Capitol. And tuition is consistently our number one priority. So we just want to thank you for your efforts and for your dollars towards this tuition freeze, as well as towards funding the University of Minnesota. As you all know, University of Minnesota is more than just the economic engine of the state. It's my home, and it's home to tens of thousands of other students across the state, and it's a place to return home for millions of other alumni. So as you know, we really do appreciate those dollars, and I also hope that you all enjoyed getting to meet your U of M student constituents on Support the U Day last week. I promise you there are a lot more where that came from. So thank you very much for your support.
Thank you for your testimony. And welcome to the committee, Mr. Jacobson. If you please state your name and affiliation for the record, that'd be.
My name is Steve Jacobson. I am the Vice President of the National Federation of the Blind of Minnesota. I want to thank you and Representative Lilly and Representative Daniels, who authored and co-authored our original bill to get some funding to create a Teachers of the Blind and Visually Impaired licensure program within the state of Minnesota. We appreciate that very much. It can help, we hope, to overcome a shortage in teachers in that area. On March 5th, the University of Minnesota testified that they weren't sure that with their other priorities they could take on a program like this. So there was an amendment adopted at that time to move this funding to the Office of Higher Education. That amendment didn't get reflected in the omnibus bill, but I didn't notice that till pretty recently. However, I did meet earlier today with the legislative assistant for Representative Lilly, and we're going to try to get that taken care of before the deadline later today. So if you see that amendment tomorrow, please help us out by supporting that. The point is not to exclude the University of Minnesota should they have a change in priorities, but to just cast a wider net for possible involvement in a new program like this from other institutions of higher education. Again, thank you very much for your support.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to provide public testimony on House File 2544 today? I see someone coming down. Hello, welcome to the committee. Please state your name and affiliation for the record.
Sure. Thank you, Madam Chair. For the record, Bruce Clavin. I represent the Minnesota wheat growers and other ag groups. This is a complete audible call at the end of the hearing. I listened to the tuition, Madam Chair, and I wanted to remind members about the applied side of the university. And so my comments quickly are on line 16.43, the ag special. The ag special has been frozen for about 8 years. This will make it 10 years in this biennium. I spoke to the committee on Representative Poppy's bill a couple weeks ago, House File 1779, that would have increased this number. Now, your bill goes up pretty large compared to the governor's request and across the street, but it's for tuition relief, and you certainly heard about that on the last fall. Certainly tuition is a national issue. For the ag side, we rely on the university for the wheat breeding, the public research, and those kind of things. And I told the committee that in 1999, the ag special was 9.5% of the total appropriation. We're down to 6.5, and under the bill, we're down to just over 6. And we don't see that number increasing anytime soon. We made an effort last year across the street, didn't get very far. And so our concern is that this number will simply never go up because the needs are so great. But for us, the ag special is a very important component of this bill. So I just want to let members know that we do have the applied side of the university, the out product, not just the front side on the tuition, that has a great importance to our state. So we'll be back, I'm sure, in 2 years, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Is there anyone else in the audience who would like to testify before the committee on House File 2544? Well, I don't see anyone that would like to do that. So now, so we have a request here to have, if members, if you could please save your documents in the save folder
so we don't have to reprint and use efficient use of our staff, who is under a lot of pressure right now to meet all these major deadlines that we have. We will be meeting back at our regular meeting time tomorrow in this room, which will be 2:30 to 4 o'clock. And I'm confident we can get through it during that time. Otherwise, we will, I'm suspecting we will. We can always come back later, but I'm assuming we'll get through during that time. So thank you, members. The meeting is adjourned.